What's up, everybody? Just want to let you guys know that we're doing a top podcast, Magic the Gathering Commander Night, this Saturday, the 26th. So if you want to join that, all you have to do is join our Discord, and you have to have a copy of Tabletop Simulator on PC. Then all you need is a Bracket 3 deck that you can use an Arca deck, Moxfield, any of those big sites, and you'll be able to import it that way. So join our Discord, links in the description for more information. We hope to see you there.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top Podcast. This week, we will be discussing Alien Resurrection. As a warning, this movie is rated R, so if you are young, as in under 18, please seek parental approval before continuing. If you are above 18, please be advised this movie has very serious and heavy subject matter, so viewer discretion is advised. Now that that's over, my name is Mike. I'm one of your hosts and joined, as always, for these discussions by First Mate Dan.
Ayo.
And Hot Kyle.
What's up, boys?
This week's Hot Kyle's got our... I'll just call you Kyle. I'm sorry. Kyle has our our icebreaker. What do you got for us, man?
All right, so we've seen four Alien movies now. My question to you is, if you had to live the experience as some basic fodder from any of these movies, which one is your most preferred and which one is your least preferred? And I think I want to clarify, like, in movie one, you'd be a member of the crew of the Nostromo. In movie two, you can be a Marine. In movie three, you're a prisoner. Movie four, you are, you know, you could say we're one of the smugglers that joined, like, the, you know, that show up on the ship. Which experience are you going for, or which one are you trying to avoid?
So I think that I'm, for the most, like, likely one I'm going to choose is Resurrection, just because there's a chance I might survive if I'm one of the fodder, just because a lot of them got away in the beginning. Best chances of survival, got to go with that one.
That was...
And then...
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say,
Mike? I just had the exact same thought. I was like, dude, like, more people, I think, make it out of Resurrection than die. So I'd take that one.
Yeah, there's boatloads that make it out. And then My opposite choice is Aliens, because I think everybody dies. So it's like there's no shot. And on top of that, it's just not a great time. It's dark. It's full of aliens. And there's a guy who catches fire and falls to his death. I don't want to be that guy.
I think for the least favorite one, I'd go with three, because, like, I don't know, man. It is... The Alien in 3 is just brutal. It's just, like, angry and mean. Although it does seem to do its job fast, so maybe I'm overthinking myself. But I'm going to go 3.
Interesting. Okay. Honestly, I think my least preferred experience is movie 1. Because at least in 2, you get a gun. I'd rather die fighting than just, like, slowly get jumped from out of some dark corner. And in 3, I feel like it's less claustrophobic, you know? You got all this space to move around in. It's scary not having any weapons, but out of the two experiences, I would much rather have the full prison than be trapped on that ship for the whole time.
Fair enough. Just going to forget about the flamethrowers, but whatever, you know, it's cool. Whatever you want to do is fine. It didn't help anyway, so what's it matter?
All right, can we jump into this one?
Yeah. So Kyle has a... This is going to be Kyle's episode, I think. He's got a take, we're just living in it. So what do you got for us, man?
Boys, I was going into this with very low expectations, and I am so pleased with the experience I had watching this movie. And my hot take for this episode is that Alien Resurrection is a better sequel to Alien 1 than Aliens is. Now, I know it's going to draw a lot of... That's going to draw a lot of controversy, but Alien Resurrection, I think, expands on the themes that Alien 1 presents and broadens the universe, whereas Aliens, it just ups the action, ups, you know, the body count, the number of aliens out there. I love James Cameron's Aliens, don't get me wrong, that's one of my favorite movies of all time, but I think this movie's, like, as a spiritual successor, is a better sequel in like the themes than I think than, you know, Aliens 2 or 3 was.
Yeah, so I mean, if I'm hearing you right, you think it's more that it's expanding on what Scott and Geiger were trying to create, whereas I think Aliens, James Cameron kind of expands on Ripley and her experience more. And so That makes sense to me, though, that you would you'd arrive at that conclusion, because as a filmmaker, those are the things you're gonna latch onto. I just couldn't disagree more.
Fair enough.
What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, this take, like, it's hot. It's like a spicy hot wing, and I would definitely choke on it. And Mike, you know what I'm talking about. but like, I kind of have to agree a little with Mike here, is that I understand where you're coming from, in that it definitely builds off of what was seen in that first one, but there's a different level of depth here that we saw from 2 and 3, at least in my opinion, on themes about, you know, we had motherhood explored in 2, and then in 3 we had
death
in the death really just explored there. So do you want to just dive into that and dissect it a little more, what you mean by like the Geiger-esque part, I guess we can start with?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, speaking of Geiger, I mean, I found that this movie had more Geiger-inspired designs throughout than the other two movies did, especially when it came to, like, massive sci-fi, like, exteriors. And they'd have these big locations, and they'd put something small, like a ship or, like, a person walking through them. And I felt, like, multiple times this movie, you'd be looking at this, like, vast expanse that barely even, like, makes sense, and you will just see somewhat, like, a small object or a person going through it. I thought in this one, you know, we kind of talked about in the first podcast how, or the podcast for the first episode, that, you know, there's a big science element in it with the android being, you know, obsessed with the design of these. But then there's also this interesting sexual element in the nature of how the alien, like, forces itself into you and, like, you know, reproduces through you. And I found that this movie, you know, this was a very science-themed movie. There was all sorts of, like, scientific takes on what you could do with the xenomorph. And like, how to study them. I feel like we learned a ton about xenomorph behavior, both how, like, when they were in the cells and when, like, it's seeing Ripley's perspective. Ripley is 50% xenomorph in this movie, and that is a mind-blowing concept. And the way she performs, it's like you almost get a peek into the brain of a xenomorph in the way that she views these, like, I kept seeing it as her viewing them as mortals, like these mere mortals around her. Like, she had this look in her eye, like she was ready to kill everybody in the room at any time, but was smart enough to, like, wait until the opportunity was right. And so you kind of get to see more about alien psychology in that way. We developed android lore and what it means to be an android and how androids have evolved over the years. I also feel like in this movie, you know, in the first movie, every character had a little bit of, like, a little more individualism than I would say in movies 2 and 3. We kind of talked about how, you know, you've got your main characters in 2, but everybody else is just like a blank marine. And then in the third movie, everybody's bald, and sometimes it's hard to even tell who was who and like separate any of those characters. And so in this one, I felt like every character had something memorable or significant about them that, like, had you at least got a sense for who they were and were able to, like, empathize more with them individually as opposed to them being just, like, faceless cannon fodder.
Yeah, really big agree on the characters being memorable there. I mean, like, you look at it and everybody's got, like, a signature thing. Like, you got Ron Perlman's just Ron Perlman. Mm-hmm. You got the guy with the guns up his sleeves, and then you've got the lady with the dreads. Yeah. It's interesting contrast for sure to the last one, especially where we couldn't even really remember any characters' names.
True.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Right there with Dan. I think you make a great point about the characters. I think the argument is there to be made that the characters are more memorable in 4 than they were in 2. I think a lot of people don't like 4, and so you don't really, like, you don't give the characters a fair shake because you don't like the movie. But I also thought the movie was drastically better than I remembered. And so, you know, on basically having watched it twice, it's like every single character was really cool and unique and stood out and had a point in the movie. And even the ones I can't name, which is most of them. And the only reason I can name the characters from Alien is because we've been doing this long enough that it's come up enough times that I'm like, okay, I've learned most of these people's names. But yeah, no, I think that's valid. And so I think the crux of where we're going to disagree is I think you view this as a filmmaker, where I'm viewing this as a storyteller. And I think the core differences there come out in which sequel you think is the better spiritual successor to the original story.
Yeah.
But I don't hate your take. I think it's fun. I think it's spicy. And honestly, I'm just so happy to have liked the movie. Like, that was such a pleasant surprise going in that second time. I was like, okay, we're going to do this, but we're not going to wear headphones and we're going to be able to hear all the dialogue. And I got done. I was like, I mean, it wasn't the best movie of all time, but it was not the absolute suck fest that I remembered. And also to its credit, you know, the design of the aliens visually was just incredible.
I know. Not once did it feel like we were looking at a guy in a costume, yeah. Which in every other movie you had.
Yeah, it was just
or
like,
a dog.
Or a dog. Yeah, it was absolutely a masterclass in the way they looked and moved and acted. And even though I think the underwater scene is kind of, I didn't think the underwater scene was great. The way they moved in the water was so well executed, and that was what, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, that was like 97 that they shot this movie. I think.
Yeah, to my knowledge, the technology was not there to be doing that so well. Like, that was a feat for back in the day. Special effect. I've seen other movies from that time, and those were great special effects.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of movies at that time that were really pushing the envelope. I mean, Jurassic Park's the one that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And, like, you know, I see some themes of that in this movie for sure. Like, you know, the xenomorphs in this movie personally reminded me a lot of raptors. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Oh, interesting.
Just the way that they strategically thought through things, like the way they got themselves out of the cage was really interesting. Like,
yeah, one of their, that's awesome. That scene was badass. That was awesome.
Yeah. That was an amazingly well thought out plan, honestly, by a creature. So I definitely like that angle. I wish they would have explored it a little more, made them more of a strategic and unseen threat. But definitely what they did with it, super cool in my opinion, from that aspect.
I didn't miss, maybe it's because it's the fourth movie, but I didn't get the fear of the xenomorph in this one that is present in... Definitely the first two, and I think it's missing a little bit in the third one. It's more just an intimidation factor. But also, I think that like the crux of good horror is that you care about the characters, and so you fear for the character that you connect with. And like we said, the characters were pretty interchangeable in three, and so you're just not going to feel that visceral fear. But in this one, I did connect with a lot of the characters, and just... Outside of the face hugger ring,
which I want to talk about, which is that was peak science horror, right?
Oh,
there.
It was so well done, so well done. But other than that, I wasn't really like I wasn't scared of the xenomorphs, and ultimately, I was more scared of the face huggers. Which I think when it comes down to it, the face huggers are just they might be the scariest part of the xenomorph cycle. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Well, so I really like that. I feel like this movie is more, while you're not being afraid of the xenomorph specifically, it's all these kind of situationally scary like moments where, the monster itself isn't like scaring you, you know, in your seat, but to be in that situation is pure horror. And even like, I feel like there's a lot of things in this to be scared of outside of the xenomorphs. You know, you've got that hybrid that shows up at the end, but then you also have like, you get to see the horror of these freaky half xenomorph, half Ripley, like failed experiments. And there's all this kind of body horror in seeing those come to like, you know, not necessarily come to life, but just exist as well. Like, I could see what you mean about there not being as much, you know, tension or suspense, but it was a little more just like in your face, like horror in a lot of scenes.
That's fair, yeah. The gore did get turned up a little bit, and the existential dread definitely was more present than in previous films.
Yeah, the choice to add a lot more gore was interesting because I think you're coming from, you know, pre this movie, because there was a time break, right, between 3 and Resurrection. And I feel like most of your kills in the first 3 movies are either mostly off screen or you're just getting close-ups of like some blood spraying or something like that. And so I feel like they spent a lot of energy using advancements in prosthetics and, you know, special effect technology to show you a lot more of the kills and to be a lot more brutal with the kills by making you watch.
Yeah, there were a couple times where they might have gone overboard in the wrong direction. The blood or the brain holding freeze frame is the one that comes to mind.
Yeah. Okay. What was that? Did you guys catch that freeze frame that he like looks at his brain and then the camera freezes for a second?
I missed that just entirely. No, but Dan clearly did. So
Do you know what I'm talking about, Dan? There's literally a moment where he's holding his brain and there's a freeze frame for like at least like a quarter to a half second. It freezes on that shot of him staring at his brain. And if you notice it, it is so just cheesy. It's such a fumble.
Yeah, I don't know if it was an accident. It lingers just too long to be noticeable.
Yes, and like that's still not the time to do a freeze frame.
Well, and it also like it really highlighted like one of my big issues was the inconsistency with the way you're gonna die, because like Captain Fuzzball, like knockoff Richard Nixon over there, gets like xenomorphed in the back of the head. Like he gets his brain bitten out and he like stands there staggering for a minute. And then Captain Cool Guy, I don't know anybody's names, but like the leader of the pirates, he just gets like bit in the leg and it's like, that's it for me. And I was like, wait, what? Like,
I do agree. That was way too quick a death. Cause I was even, when I was watching, I'm like, oh, to be trapped like half in something and to have your bottom half just being slowly eaten away is pure horror. But it wasn't, it was so instantaneous.
Yeah, that one got dropped. While we're on the subject, though, another one that I thought was a fumble that could have been so cool, the dribbling of the basketball. I think it's a flop on 2 levels. One, it's just cheesy. I don't need a 40-year-old white woman in, like, boots dribbling a basketball. It does nothing for me. It's just dumb. But 2, it's coming right off the scene where we realize, oh my gosh, these people are pirates. They sold humans to this new corporation or the government, and all these people are waking up realizing there's facehugger eggs right in front of them. And the facehugger eggs open up and you see like the motion blur, and then it cuts. And it cuts to Ripley bouncing the basketball, and then like 3 seconds later it's that shot where it's the camera's underneath the net and she dunks the ball. If you had quick cut from the facehuggers leaping out of the egg to the ball being dunked into the net, it'd have been so visually visceral and you'd have felt, oh my gosh, like the ball is the face hugger, and like it had been such a good transition, and instead you get dribble, dribble, and then dunk. And I was just like, you blew it twice, and it bothers me.
Now who's talking like a filmmaker?
It's not that I can't do it. It's just not that it's not my first instinct. And this is all from spending time around you.
Okay, I love the subtext of that scene in just seeing like Ripley being this superior being. Like, I think what brings that scene home for me is the power in Ripley's like surefire confidence. She is so fearless in that scene. And you have Ron Perlman come in and he's real like icky and he is in her face and she does not like budge for a moment. Like, I really liked the performances in that scene. And like, yes, I guess basketball is a weird way to take it, but I really choice. Like, that was the moment where I really was getting bought in on like, look, I think Sigourney Weaver's performance was incredible. I understand why people didn't, you know, thought it was a weird direction, because it's not the Ripley we know. This is not our Ripley at all. This is a fucking monster. and like she portrayed that, like that monstrous edge, like throughout her entire performance. And so I love seeing her like, you know, I think there's a lot of kind of themes in this of being a, you know, through Sigourney Weaver and through Winona Ryder, you have these two characters who are outsiders in a human's world. Like, they're both just something different. They're surrounded by humans. But I think they kind of played into that with this edge of, like, being a woman in a man's world. And so it was interesting to see Ron Perlman, who is this, like, absolute brute, really, like, getting, like, icky and in Sigourney Weaver's face. And,
she is not budge the one with whom to fuck. Single greatest piece of dialogue ever been written, right there. Sorry, you're right though. Like, I just feel like that scene could have been done. Like, the dribbling was just the only part I really didn't need. I feel like if you would cut the dribbling, yeah, that scene wouldn't be iconically laughable, and it had been actually really like, and it had been this really impactful transition. And then you can have Ron Perlman walk in, and she can still just put him in his place. Also, the backward shot, super cool piece of film lore.
Okay, yes. I was going to ask if you guys knew about this. She made that shot.
Yeah, that is crazy. And then did you hear about the Ron Perlman completely ruining the shot because he was so blown away that she actually did it?
Okay.
He was like, oh, my God.
No.
He completely broke character. And they're like, oh, gosh, can we edit that now?
Oh, you could totally. Ron? You just film another one where you drop the ball in, have him respond appropriately, and you just cut it to work. It's not that bad, but... Oh my
God. Hey, Ron, come on, man. You're gonna embody this character that hard on screen, but then break the second something doesn't go to plan.
I mean,
fucking A.
I might have broke too. Oh, I mean, I'm not Ron Perlman. I'm this isn't what I do, but like I feel for the guy. It's like nobody expected that to happen.
No. Huge shout out to her for practicing that. Like, honestly, that was amazing.
Like, it'd be like if
Marty... Ron Perlman's...
It'd be like if Marty McFly just got up on stage and like actually whipped out that guitar solo on his own. Like, no one would know what to do.
Yeah. I did think Ron Perlman's character, okay, he did have some of the worst like line deliveries ever. Though I bet you at the time.
They were my favorite part of the movie in all.
Oh my, what does he say where he's like, I can get you off. I don't know about the ship.
Yeah. Like, they were terrible lines to pen. Oh, yeah. Like, somebody put pen to paper and came up with that. But, man, did he deliver that. It was like in Suicide Squad, the first one. I was just like, Will Smith is doing the best he can with the garbage he was given. And
nice.
I think Ron Perlman did the same thing. Like, he had the lines, and it was like, what is this? But he just went 110%, and I love it.
Oh. Look, honestly, we should do some research on this, because I think he was improvising. I think he came in like the hot dog on set, and he was just like, hey, what if I said this? And I bet like the crew and director were like, oh man, we love it. And so I think he was just like, like being Ron Perlman and chirping in lines. And back in the 90s, everybody was like, yeah, you're the best, Ron Perlman. Like, I figured that he was like going off the rails in his own direction with it. I thought that was all him.
I mean, the worst part is I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth now, because if that was the case, I'd love it too. Like,
yeah,
if it was just like that was just nonsense, like ad-libbing. It's just fun. It like one of my big complaints about the movie is that it put a bunch of jokes in Alien that I didn't feel like needed to be there. Like, it felt like modern complaining about like Marvel movies or James Gunn, where it's like, hey, let the emotions sit. You know, that's like constantly the complaint I hear. It's like, you don't need to shoehorn a joke in. And I agree, Alien's not the place to shoehorn a joke in, but man, did I liked how cheesy he was. It was enjoyable.
Yeah. It was enjoyable. Even if I wasn't laughing for the right reasons, I was laughing.
Yeah.
I do want to like say about his character though, something I really appreciated about it was, you know, I think this movie tied in with all the science elements is the idea of like taming, something wild, taming something like, taming something unnatural or something wild. And, you know, you have these scientists who are trying to tame the xenomorphs, and they're trying to tame Ripley, trying to make her more civilized. And I found that Ron Perlman's character, just off the intro, right, he's making these monkey noises when you first meet him, and he throws a knife into this guy's leg, like giving no fucks about like that guy's like personal space or anything. And so I feel like Ron Perlman embodied a character who, even in this like super like corporate universe, was untamable. He was like, he would not be able to fit in any kind of normal human standards. He's practically, you know, he's a few steps away from being a wild animal, mm-hmm. but he's been managed to like scrape by as a pirate. And so I thought it was interesting to see a character, a human that was so wild and uncivilized, like in this movie where it's all about trying to tame these uncivilized things.
I really like that take. I hadn't considered that, but yeah, that's a great point.
It was just something I kept noticing. Go ahead.
I also really like it because I feel like you may have mentioned it before, but there was also a scene with a scientist and the noodles and how he ends up eating it. And it looks like kind of like a worm the way he's eating it with his bare hands. Is like, yeah. That.
Well, he's like, he's literally trying to teach Ripley to eat with silverware right there. But then he just picks up the noodle and eats it right out of his hand. And it's very like, it almost implied to me, like, even though he's the one all dressed up and he's the one in charge, he's like the most uncivilized of them all. Like, he cares the least about any other creatures. Like, he's a barbarian. Like, I thought there was like subtext in the way he, you know, was acting so almost animalistic while trying to teach this animal how to be a human.
Yeah, and honestly, I can't believe we've gone this long without talking about the scientist guy.
Oh, man.
Possibly the creepiest part of the whole movie to me.
An actual freak.
Like.
Oh, wait. You're talking about Worm Tongue from Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
Oh, like, my God. What a weirdo.
Aliens are creepy, but pale dudes with alien kinks keep them away from me. Like.
Yeah, another one of those, like, are humans worse than the aliens kind of thing?
Yeah. And honestly, to a certain extent, I think that's something I do think this movie played with really, really well that it doesn't get a lot of credit for. Because when you see all the other, when you see Ripley 1 through 7 and what Ripley 8 could have been, it's like, I feel like that is just the definitive stamp to the, that's the answer to the question, like, who's worse, the company or the aliens?
I really appreciated that scene is, like, when Sigourney sees all these, you know, all these versions of herself, for the, you know, the whole movie, she is very, like, stoic and calm, like, aggressive, but she never breaks her cool. And in this one moment, you see her feel the purest form of empathy because she literally is seeing herself. Like, she instantly breaks down and instantly has, like, as much empathy as possible for these failed experiments. It's almost like she's feeling their pain for them. There was something really profound in her performance where she wasn't like, oh, man, this is messed up. Or, oh, man, that, like, I hate the company now. Like, she dropped right into just feeling, like, the hurt that she herself in other, like, clones had gone through over and over and over again. And I thought that was interesting. You know, you rarely get to see a character feel for oneself so purely. But it was almost like both her and the xenomorph inside, like, were completely in agreement about how devastated they were to see this, like, horror.
I have to agree with you there. It's a really stark contrast to the complete lack of empathy she showed earlier in the movie. I mean, she literally, what was the pirate leader gang's name? She literally used his body as a shield to take out a xenomorph and then just walked over him with his teammates right in front of him. Like, literally zero care in the world. And she's like, he was in my way. Like,
yeah. Cool, though. So sick, though, that she used the alien tunnels to get there.
Like, oh, yeah.
She knows how to think how they think. She knows how to traverse through ships the way they do.
That is a really interesting part there. Just, like, being able to apply the human part and the xenomorph part and just think your way through it. I like it.
Yeah. So something else I do want to, like, talk about since, you know, this, I feel like this brings in a lot more of the Geiger-esque themes of the first movie, is that there was a lot of, I think, sexual elements of this film that were, like, you know, that were put center screen many times, you know, down to the first scene where they extract the alien from Ripley. I mean, that thing, that looks like a penis. That is the most penis-like alien I've ever seen. Like, other times, I feel like we talked about it on the podcast, and I was like, I don't know. This one, that is literally a dick they pull out of her body. I did think, oh my God, do you remember when they, like, when Winona Ryder, she's revealed to be an android, and she's got this bullet hole in her, and, like, Ridley just gets in there with her fingers, man. They, like, set the camera on the hole, and she just fingers that hole, and there's all this white goo, like, covering her fingers. It was, like, I almost gagged. Like, it was really gross to look at. But, like, I feel like this movie did not shy away from, like, these, like, weird sexual themes that were kind of, like, kind of introduced in the first one. Even down to, like, what that alien at the end. I mean, great reveal that I wasn't even thinking about the fact that the whole time we have this like human looking hybrid of Ripley and a xenomorph. On the other end of the spectrum, there is a xenomorph that is half Ripley and half xenomorph, but in the xenomorph body. And, like, it's the counterpart, right? The like, opposite end of the spectrum to her.
You got to imagine, and it's the one that they pull out of her, too. Like, it's the first thing they show us, and then you just forget it.
Yes. And, I mean, that alien has a vagina. There's no other way to put it. So they gave it, Ripley gave it a reproductive system. And, like, and so, you know, with this kind of the themes I was talking about, like, being a woman in a man's world, I wonder if adding into that is having another female alien, an alien with a vagina, going through this, like, intense, like, hard experience as well. Like, you know, being put through by these scientists who are kind of forcing it to do this thing. Which, that birth sequence, oh God, that was so gross.
It was.
That was the grossest thing I've seen in this franchise, man. That was, this was a nasty movie. They created a lot of practical, slimy, like, gross effects. And we just have people, like, rip through them, and it was all dripping, and the whole time it was disgusting in all the right ways. I'll give it that much. But this was a gross movie.
It was also some really brilliant, like, you might know the term. What's the term when you have, like, a visual callback for symmetry's sake? So, like, the first, like, when we see Ripley after they pull the alien out of her, she's, like, clawing her way out of that synthetic bag thing. And then
it looks like an egg.
And then the queen gives birth, and the newborn claws its way out. It's like the exact same thing. Like, it's this visual connection between the two of them.
Wow. Yeah, that's really sweet. I didn't even think about that.
It is. I also thought super gross, but, you know.
So gross. But I also do notice, like, when it's interesting that before the queen gives birth, like, it wants Ripley to be there, because there is this, like, Ripley inside of that xenomorph that wants to share this experience with the human Ripley. And but when the aliens are, like, there's a xenomorph that carries Ripley there, and the way it's holding her is so intimate. Like, it's like it's got its arms wrapped around her, and it's cradling her head, and there's this, like, interesting, like, rocking happening. And then you see on Ripley's face, you see her, like, almost, like, give herself over to it. Like,
yeah, she leans into it.
Yeah, there was something really, like, intimate about that that was just so visually fascinating. I was appreciating all the little elements of that, like, that Geiger-esque, like, quality that, you know, we've been talking about on this podcast.
Yeah, and then what did you think of the newborn? Because there was some production and some budgetary restrictions.
Really?
Yeah, so apparently what I've heard from my limited research, admittedly, is that originally it was supposed to make it to Earth, and there was the big final confrontation was actually supposed to be Sigourney and Winona Ryder against this newborn on Earth. It was going to be a big fight sequence, but they were like, it's too expensive, and so they just suck it out of the hole in the side of the ship, which might be the grossest death in the first four movies by a mile. But, like,
one of the saddest, in my opinion, too.
Oh my gosh, you do feel like it's face, you feel it. It's just
a baby. It's literally just a newborn baby. I do want to say, design wise you know, in a movie that, as I've already said, was very disgusting throughout, that creature was the icing on the cake. It looked so wrong. It looked so incorrect. I actually really appreciated, like, incorporating a human skull and giving it, like, these sunken in eyes where you could see, like, eyes behind it. You could see its eyes, and they were almost, like, sympathetic. They were, you almost, like, kind of cared for this thing. I liked the design because it freaked me out so much. I thought it was another really disgusting thing in a movie full of disgusting things. Like, it looked like it shouldn't exist, but these scientists almost willed it into creation. Like, and that dynamic, it freaked me out.
Yeah, it's definitely something that, like, when you compare it to the, The Offspring. Yeah. I liked how off-putting The Offspring was. This, I just don't like it. But, like, not as a complaint. Like, it's, like, exactly what you're saying. I'm just like, I just don't want to look at it, please.
Yeah, I do want to...
The eyes really sell it. Like, yes. It's just this really, like, dark, eerie... Like, there are some shots that you can't really see the black, beady part of it. It's just, like, the shape of the skull, and it just looks like there's nothing there. And I'm like, this is unnatural to look at, but...
Cool. Yeah,
which also does tie back to the Geiger design, though, because I think in the original, in the Alien 1, I think it's not supposed to have conventional eyes. And so, like, I love the scenes when you can't see its eyes, because I think that's how it should have been.
Right. Interesting. I do think it's interesting that, you know, this thing's born and so it immediately kills its mom, which is a funny choice. Right. But, you know, and then it goes over to Ripley and has all this, like, you know, it, like, wants to embrace Ripley. And I was thinking about this thing being part human, part xenomorph. Xenomorphs themselves, they don't have any, you know, emotion, right? They're like, they're just killers. And so I wonder if, you know, this creature, it has no empathy for its mother. On the xenomorph side, but seeing the face of Ripley is like, I think it appealed to the human side of this freaky hybrid creature. And that human side of it just wanted its mommy, you know, just wanted to, like, be with its mother and embrace her. And so I thought the way it behaved, while it didn't fully make sense for a newborn baby, that's like this mix of human emotions and xenomorph emotions. I kind of liked the weird dichotomy of these two, like, of how that all comes to life right after it's born.
Yeah, I feel like it just didn't get enough time to be everything it could have been. And true. I'm kind of just haunted by the knowledge of what was planned, and it just bums me out.
Yeah, okay.
But it was also such a good death.
I have to agree there. That was something else, man. It's like a blender almost, but in the worst kind of way. Like when you see its bones starting to come out, and it's like, oh gosh, that is not a good way to go at all.
Now, I do feel like we would be remiss if we didn't discuss two characters that I cannot name off the top of my head. But guy who still had the embryo in his chest for the whole time, and the soldier that was still there, who I've just been calling Billy in my head, who makes it all the way to the end and then gets got by the newborn, were both great characters.
Yeah. Oh, I really appreciated. I was cracking up in the best way when this guy wakes up from the pod and, like, everyone's got guns to his head, and they find out, like, what does Ripley say? She's like, oh, there's one inside of him. And he's like, what's inside me? And everyone in the room's talking about what to do. Well, should we kill him? It'd be a better death. Well, we can't take him with us. We can't. And he's like, what's inside me? And they're, like, not even listening to him, because in their eyes, he's already dead anyway. And, like, that scene, to wake up from being asleep and to be hit with all that... All to cap it off with, like, Ripley being like, listen, there is a nasty little alien inside you that's going to burst out and kill you any minute now. Any questions? That is something you could only do in the Alien universe. And I just thought it was done so, so well.
And look, I'm the monster's mommy.
Yes! Well, and, like, wondering, because I kept wondering, like, well, what is he living for? Like, why are you keeping this guy around? There's no, you don't want to put him back into a cryo chamber and maybe take him back to Earth where the humans can now get a hold of another sample. Like, I didn't understand what the point of keeping him around was. And I thought at the end, when he lets the alien, well, first off, he saves the day.
Right.
Like, because he was going to die anyway. He had that, like, supernatural, like, fighting beyond death because he was so angry kind of thing. But to have the alien burst through his chest and then through that scientist's head was kind of the ultimate way to, like, bring his story full circle, to give him the retribution like he deserved, in a way that also saved the crew, that gave him a chance at life. like as its own little kind of subplot for a character. I thought that was brilliantly done.
It was. And I do think, I swear, the more we talk about this movie, the more I like it. but like, I think at the point in the movie where they find the guy, Winona is kind of in charge. And Ripley's not going to care if that guy lives because she's part alien anyway. So she's not like, we got to kill the guy off. I don't think she even cares if it bursts on Earth necessarily. This isn't Ripley anymore. This is a new creature. It just has Ripley's face.
Yeah.
And Winona's whole thing is that she can't hurt anybody. So the two people who really get to call the shots are the two least likely people to make what I would call the right decision in the moment and mercy kill the guy. So even though it makes no sense to us when you think about where the characters were, it makes sense why they chose to let him live, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's actually, that's a great point. I didn't even think about that. I do want to say Winona Ryder is the only character we've seen in this franchise that I would classify as a hero, at least a hero in intention. You know, Ripley had to rise to the occasion more out of self-preservation and for, like, you know, her pseudo daughter. But Winona Ryder's the only character we've seen that actually wants to make the universe a better place.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and say something. Ripley is a mother. Winona Ryder is a hero.
Nice.
And Winona, like you said, she is actively trying to be a hero to more than just her immediate situation. Whereas Ripley is like, look, I'm here to save myself and my surrogate family. That's it. Right? She's not trying to be more than the hero to her family, and that's it. Whereas, you're right, Winona is legitimately the first character that has a higher cause driving her. And it's interesting to see. And in all honesty, I wouldn't be upset to get to see a story with her in it. I mean, obviously, it's not going to happen at this point, but...
Didn't we find out this was supposed to lead into a new trilogy?
Yeah, I didn't read that whole thing you sent, but I skimmed it, and that seemed like the gist.
Well, so it's interesting that, you know, I could almost see Winona and Ripley, like, in another film following this. Like, it feels like they really set these characters up, and by letting them both live, you have the room to bring them into further stories. And it did feel like there was a lot more that these two characters, like, could have had to say in future movies to come.
Yeah, it could have been interesting. Honestly, blind guy take here. When I first saw the picture that you sent, I'll see if I can flash it up on the screen. Apologies when I forget to do that. I thought it was Winona Ryder and Courtney Cox, like turn of the millennia Courtney Cox. I was like, oh, that'd be a sick pairing, or would have been a sick pairing. And then I looked closer, and I was like, oh, never mind, that's Sigourney Weaver. But also, that would have been a really cool movie. Like, the two of them in Alien. I was like, honestly, that'd be another great duo.
Works.
Yeah, I would have loved to see the two of them go head-to-head. Like, I would have loved to see them part ways and just have them be on opposite sides of something. I think that could be really cool.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree. Because you almost could have seen that happening in this movie. In the idea that, like... If Winona, realizing that Ripley's not even human but part alien, she's got a mission to stop these xenomorphs, right? So if she kind of realized it was within her morals to her coding to be able to hurt this thing because it's not human, but also that she needs to hurt it in order to stop the xenomorphs, you could have had a showdown in this movie too.
Right.
Though, you know, they really went for almost like a romantic edge, I feel like, with those two.
They did.
Which I could also appreciate.
I think if you had had more movies, that could have been a really interesting multi-movie plot of her having to come to the conclusion that she needs to actually face down Ripley. Could have been really cool.
I mean, you could have, exactly, to go from romance to enemies, like, has that much more juice in it.
Yeah, also interesting point to call back to one of our older episodes. I think this might be the only android we've had that does not have an interest in the perfect being.
Wow, it's so true.
I think it's only her, now that I'm thinking back on it.
And it was nice to get some real android screen time again, because that did get that was another thing that just got lost in three, is you get like the blip of Bishop, and then it's just it's gone.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that, because even in two, Bishop was really fascinated by it, but he never like took it to a point where he betrayed humanity for it.
Yeah, but the interest was still definitely there.
So I do want to throw in that I loved the camera work in this movie. I loved that the camera would it would move around a lot and then land on the specific thing you needed to see. You know, there was one shot when they're in the basketball court again, but it's the moment where all the guards come in to like arrest the pirates. And the camera kind of flashes to all these faces of everybody reacting, but then it pans through the room and lands on behind the one guy's back as he like launches his little wrist shooters. And, you know, there was another one. They even did this when the alien bursts out of the guy's chest. He screams and the camera moves down his throat and then lands on the thing you need to see. I thought the camera movement was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it was really well shot. I think I'm never going to get over the dribbling being unnecessary. But other than that, it was so good. Also, the little spider gag when they're climbing the... so fantastic. Like, you know, you get that, the change in focus and the so good.
Yeah. Well, okay. And so speaking of that scene, there's one fumble that I do also want to call out. And that's that an alien spits acid at the one guy and hits his face, which they have never been able to do before.
And it happens once in three.
Oh, does it?
Yes.
Okay, I forgot.
But it's
about
a problem
that
in three as well, because it's the first kill. He shoots acid in the guy's face. He runs into the
fan
blade. And he falls into the fan.
And then he just runs after them in the hallways for the rest of the movie. And it's like, hey, man, pull the trigger.
Yeah, you got a really good weapon there. Well, and it completely negates the need for xenomorphs to have to kill one of their own to like sink through the floor.
If oh my spit acid, gosh, it does.
Why wouldn't they all just spit acid on the floor? Like,
oh, or no.
In, you know, in any of the situation, like going back to other movies, if they could all do this, you know, into barricading them out wouldn't mean anything. They can just melt their way through doors that way. Like, to give them the ability to spit acid completely, like,
they're broken.
It destroys, exactly. It destroys a lot of like what has worked in previous movies. And it's kind of like you either got to commit to them doing that all out or don't. Because a one-time cameo of acid spitting is silly.
Yeah, I agree. That should be something reserved for the weird egg phase that we'll discuss in a later film.
Sounds good.
All right, let's wrap it by same way we always do. Rank it out of 10 and rank it amongst your... rank all four movies so far.
Okay, I'm going to give... I'm going to give Alien Resurrection... I'm going to give it an 8.
Dang, that's so wild. I'm not even mad.
I'm going to give it an 8, and I'm going to... I still have to go... 1, 2, 4, 3. I know I called it a better sequel to Aliens, but Aliens is still, I think, just a higher quality movie at the end of the day.
No question.
As far as recapturing that vision, you know, I think it's top tier, but as far as all the movies in order, 1, 2, 4, 3 is where I stand.
I think I'm going to have to give it a 6. I thought it was a very watchable movie and I had a great time watching it, but just something thematically didn't quite sit well with me. And I think I might lean more towards Mike's line of thought here from a storytelling perspective. It just doesn't feel consistent with 2 and 3, but I still totally hear all your points today. And after hearing them, like, I do appreciate it a little more, but I still have to give it a 6. But overall ranking, I'm going to have to still go with 2, 1, 3, and then 4.
Okay. All right, Dan and I are going to differ a little bit. I like it. First thing I'm going to do is retroactively move Alien 3 from a 7 to a 6. I regret that decision in hindsight. And so I'm going to give Alien Resurrection the 7.
Oh.
I I expected to hate this movie the most, and after multiple watches and discussing as much as we have, I'm just kind of like, you know what? It has grown on me. I think for me, I prefer the exploration of the continuation of someone's character arc. That's the core of story, in my opinion. And so I'm always going to think that Aliens is the better sequel because it explores Ripley's character. And that's more important to me than the thematic elements of the visual storytelling. But ranking, I'm going to go 2, 1, 4, 3.
Okay.
And then we got a decision to make that a better podcaster would do off the air. But here we are. Do we want to do Alien Romulus next and do all the Alien in the title movies, or do we want to do Prometheus next and keep the order going?
Been cooking on this. I would rather do Prometheus mostly because there is a tie-in from Prometheus to Romulus. And so with us being, with these movies being so fresh and so analyzed in our minds, I want to know if that tie-in feels good having seen Prometheus and all these other Alien movies. I want to know if it's a good way of bridging the gap.
All right.
That being said, I would be down to do Prometheus and then Romulus.
Oh yeah, screw Covenant. Screw Covenant. I'm 100% on the forget about Covenant train. If we got time, we can do Covenant, but okay. Alien Romulus is so good, it's not worth missing Romulus to watch Alien Covenant.
agreed. I still think we should do Covenant just to kind of hit it with fresh eyes.
Yeah.
But I agree that it's low priority.
All right. I'm good with
and
that.
And boys, we're only a few weeks out from the show.
Dude, I'm getting hyped. I don't know if we discussed this or not. I cracked my spoiler-free. I realized I was like, I'm not going to be able to discuss Alien Romulus, or excuse me, Alien Earth before it comes out if I don't just watch this trailer. It's a banger, man. It looks so good.
It looks so good. It's like, I'm so excited to see, you know, with these five other creatures that we're going to be dealing with, all the different kind of directions we're taking monster horror in this sci-fi universe.
It's going to be good.
Because then you even wonder if we're going to get xenomorph, like, eggs that attach to these other creatures, creating new and freaky xenomorph hybrids.
Right.
It's so exciting. It's so exciting.
It's going to be good. It's coming up. All right. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, we're super glad. Thank you so much for listening. Go ahead and leave us a like, comment, subscribe. You're an internet pro at this point. You know what to do. And until next time, peace.